Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hello.
Because all things Fallout related are going on. Now I've broken this down into five different points that we're going to sort of tackle, because the history of Fallout is both fascinating and fraught with different business decisions. Started out as a Black Isle Studios IP, Bethesda acquired it. And it's just the general, like I said, the general state of it is a bit higgledy-piggledy.
Well, I mean, looking at Fallout 76, you would not be able to tell me that Fallout 1 and that game were related bar a name, because there have been so many changes that have happened along the way that you kind of forget how different it was when it first started out. I mean, did you guys play the first game?
No, my first Fallout was 3.
Fair enough. And then I
played New Vegas and 4. So that's pretty much the extent of my experience with that franchise. I'm sure that'll be the same for quite a lot of people who jumped on in 2007 when it came out.
And the thing is, a lot of people call that the Great Divergence, which is obviously like the reference in the game itself is when we split from the
biblical.
Because in the game, obviously, that's when we split off from Fallout's like made up universe. Mm. And many people consider the Fallout series to have ended with Fallout Brotherhood of Steel or whatever.
So we got some New Testament and Old Testament
and
stuff.
And then Fallout 3
right
came out and everyone was like, oh, this is the Fallout experience. But the purists were like, no, it's not.
And they foretold of the Great Divergence.
The best way to think of it is like the Fallout 3 fans going forward are like the Lone Wanderer, you know, like the humans setting out all happy and jolly with their music on their arm. And the ones before that are the super mutants, the ones that think that they're better for liking the original games and put up with a lot of ugly stuff.
That's the thing. So I was going to just start out with our general sort of thoughts on where we are with the fandom and the franchise at the minute, because my first proper one was Fallout 3. I've gone back and watched a whole bunch of gameplay for Fallout 1 and 2. I've never actually had the pleasure of playing either of them, but I know the certain characters from them, like the leader, and I know different armor sets originated in them. And I know about the Wasteland series too, that a lot of the devs, a lot of Black Isle guys went across to, well, some of them went to Obsidian, some of them went across and started making the Wasteland games, which are more in the vein of old school top-down Fallout.
Yeah.
But where are you guys on Fallout in general? Do you still hold it in pretty high regard?
For me personally, it's the BioShock universe is the top and the Fallout one is directly underneath, because I love post-apocalyptic films, genres, anything to do with like literature and stuff like that. I find myself drawn to the weird spectacle of the downfall of mankind, a thing that I would not survive very well in. I mean, what are my skills outside of doing some alright voiceovers? I would be the first person against the wall in many cases.
Mate, you can paint the living hell out of some figures.
Mephidius, the game company, actually finally gets around to sending me my copy of Fallout Wasteland Survivalist. Maybe we'll play it on the channel for you guys. Hint, hint, Chris Birch, developer, get in touch.
I think Fallout, of all the great video game mythoses, is probably up there with the very best.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of that comes from, obviously, the groundwork that Black Isle Studios did with the first few games. And I personally, because I love history. History is like my jam. I did a lot of American history. So I always find it massively interesting that there's this post-apocalyptic society, or this universe rather, that never kind of evolved beyond the 1950s and the Cold War mindset, and the fact that you have entire like people who almost worship like everything from the 50s. So you have the Kungs from New Vegas.
Oh, they're amazing.
Evolved their entire dynasty around. I think the Fallout mythos, there is no reason for why it shouldn't be compelling, but that appears to be the situation that we're now in.
So we will get there because I kind of want to outline why those old games made such an impact, because it was strange when they when Bethesda acquired the Fallout IP, and you can watch Danny O'Dwyer's No Clip documentary on it. Was literally kind of it was kind of Todd Howard and a few of the guys at Bethesda's. They were huge fans of the original Fallout, and they managed to acquire the IP through mostly one of their relationships. They talked to one of their people that they knew and said, "Hey, we're interested in doing something Fallout related," and that became Fallout 3. And so, like, you've played the first two, and the general sort of like way that the story's done, the narrative's done in those first two games is very different to the way it's done now.
I'd say that there are big narrative similarities between Fallout 1, 2 and Tactics to maybe Fallout New Vegas is probably the closest, because I'd say that New Vegas for me personally has the tighter storyline. It's very, very similar. Like, the basic premise of the first game is you live in a vault, you a warship is broken, you're sent out to fix it, and you uncover just what the spectacle of the world around you as you go along. So I'd say that this storytelling, or the basic narrative, is usually the same across all of them. You emerge from somewhere and you're like, wow, crazy, this is all mad.
There was also something about, like, again, from what I've gathered, you might be able to shed more light on it, but those original two games, and three obviously carried this forward, like, for the most part, but there was always this level of detail to the world itself, this kind of weird, like, quirky, fun, like, really identifiable approach to the wasteland.
There's a weird striking of like, comedy and tragedy with Fallout, which is why I find it so appealing, because it goes to the extreme of both sides. You'll have moments where, like, you get the Wild Wasteland perk and you find Indiana Jones in the fridge, and like what's the name of Luke Skywalker's adopted parents again?
Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Yeah, and you find them, their bodies,
skeletons,
you find their skeletons. But then in the, like, first game, you can also murder kids, and you've got to make interesting decisions as to whether or not you're going to, like, destroy an entire civilization of ghouls who've done nothing wrong apart from just be ugly, you know.
There is an irreverent streak to it, I think. The mythos that they've created itself is very kind of, like, you know, it's very big and deep. But there are certain occasions where the charm of Fallout comes from that kind of, that dark humour.
It's very dark humour.
Like, and again, if we're going to talk about morality systems in gaming and kind of talking about consequences, Fallout probably... I know you can join whatever you want to in certain playthroughs, and it really is up to the player themselves as to how far down the rabbit hole they go with, you know, which factions they do. But yeah, like, that kind of, that dark humour really has carried the series.
So, and, I mean, you also had stuff like the secret cow level and things that were very
top. In Diablo and stuff like that.
I thought that was in Fallout thing.
That's Diablo.
Am I just looking? I'm thinking of old school top down.
Because you're thinking about
just thinking.
But that's the thing. Like, isometric games like that, like the Diablo game, the loot grindy stuff. That Fallout stood out very different to that because of things like the VAT system, because of the morality and choices that you got to make throughout it. Like, imagine being a developer working on the first game, even on the latest one, and just thinking, my God, how many lines of writing dialogue do I need to come up with this? Because everything's going to be scrutinized. There are YouTubers out there like Oxhorn, who's like a personal favorite of mine, who goes into every single location, reads every single bit of literature that's on the ground around it, and he will tell you the story of what happened there. And the fact that he's still going with Fallout 3 and 4, and he's been doing this for a year and a half, you're like... Okay, that's how much it was in there. It boggles the mind how one person is spending all that time doing that when they're made in a series of, like, you know, 2 or 3 years at a time.
That's the perfect segue, because so obviously when Bethesda acquired the Fallout IP and they made Fallout 3, Bethesda's whole bread and butter is world building and world design and environmental design, obviously in a 3D space that was different to the older Fallouts. And so when Fallout 3 landed, for a lot of people, it was the perfect mesh of the two. You kind of had the old school people being like, it doesn't feel the same way. Some of the grittiness has kind of gone, some of it's been streamlined. But for a lot of people, like Ewan said, Fallout 3 is their first taste of Fallout. And that was the kind of the new template for going forward, which, like, you kind of look at Fallout 4, and one of the problems with that seems to be that they didn't do enough with it. It's almost like they don't know how to go forward with
it. Yeah, Fallout 4 is an interesting case. I don't know if I'm leaping ahead of the discussion
here. Go for it.
But Fallout 4, the problems that we currently find ourselves in with the Fallout series, I think, do begin with 4, when they try and streamline the narrative and assign a role to the player. So instead of just being a random wanderer who you can carve out your own journey in the world, you know, there's no voice actor in, like, Fallout 3 or New Vegas. You are just your own guy, and you can do what you want in that sandbox. Fallout 4, you are the father of the son.
Yeah.
You have a voice. Mm. You have to do this thing. And obviously, you don't have to do the story, but every single interaction you have, right down to the dialogue where you just choose a thing and then he'll say something
really
for
didn't
you.
Like that.
To me, that is antithetical to the entire draw of that series because you are being given a role and you have to do a set thing.
Mm-hmm. It's an illusion of choice.
Yes.
That's what it is, because it's like, okay, you want to play as this sort of sarcastic, backhanded, low-down, dirty dealer dad, as it were, then your only choice is to press the sarcastic button and hope that it lines up with what you want. Whereas every other game had, there were some times where you would have nearly 8 to 10 lines of dialogue to choose from, and they were so specific that you were like, that is the exact moral grey area that I want to play.
I think because it was so text-driven as well, it meant that they could cater to way more personality types. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like you said, in 4, it's like you've got 4 things to pick from. Mm-hmm. And one of the first mods that came out was someone writing out exactly what you were going to say because it was so misleading.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the basic sort of story setup that you're a father looking for his infant child. There's no reason you should do anything other than track down your child, which immediately removed that sort of freedom that was there beforehand. Like Fallout 3, you're searching for your dad, and in New Vegas, you're a courier, but they're more open.
Yes.
Like, just there's more things you can do.
I would argue, from a personal standpoint, that the courier is the best character in the Fallout universe because of a little thing that a lot of people take for granted, which is he has or she has prior knowledge of the world before. Mm-hmm. It makes sense why they would be collecting caps. It makes sense why they would be holding on to stuff. It doesn't technically make sense if you're the any of the vault dwellers, because you'll come out and be like, why do I need these caps?
What's a super
Like, no one explains that to you except if you're in the right situation at the right time. Mm-hmm. And again, that still focuses your gameplay. Whereas the courier's like, no, I know that this is what I think, the life that I live, as it were.
Yeah, that's kind of been like a larger open world problem in general. Mm-hmm. Like Mass Effect 3 for me was one of the most stark examples because it was like the world, Earth, is literally being destroyed
but
every
second. Do this fun stuff over
fetch this person's purse. And it's like, that's never going to make sense. And I think a lot of open world devs have struggled with narratives that make sense. The Witcher 3, I think, nails it.
Yeah.
It's reconciling that urgency with that inherent sense of adventurism that you want to do when you hop into an open world. And again, Fallout 4, I really think, did not get that.
And so I think one of the things that I think they tried to experiment with 4 was to put a more over-narrative drive to it. Mm-hmm. And it sort of clashed with like the older dialogue systems or the older approaches that we have towards Fallout. You should be able to leap in and have this big customizable experience, which lets us talk about Obsidian and New Vegas. So Obsidian's devs, or some of the people that are working for Obsidian, were Black Isle people. Mm-hmm. So they came across from the original first two games and went to Obsidian and then helped make New Vegas. Now, it's a strange thing to put out there, but do Bethesda actually make the worst Fallout games? And is New Vegas so much better because of that Obsidian Black Isle talent?
No, they don't. They don't make the worst Fallout games. It's just that they clearly want to make a different type of game, and they're not entirely sure how to approach to give this to the audience. Like, I will go and attack Peter Molyneux for all of the lies that he said.
Now,
now Todd Howard is joining that rank of just somebody who promised something and then just maybe didn't deliver on it. But they're not bad people, and it's not like the Bethesda people are sitting there going, "I want to make a bad game."
No,
they want to make a good game.
I think it's a case of potentially they don't. It sounds very, very entitled and very, very presumptive to say, but maybe they don't get why people like Fallout because it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the recent things. So you had New Vegas in 2012, 2013,
which came out about a year and a half after
New Vegas 2010.
Either way,
I know it came out very shortly after Fallout 3, after the huge wait for that.
So so you sort of had, you had Fallout 3 was like Bethesda's first crack at the whip kind of thing, and it was mostly incredibly well received, very solid, very much them applying the Elder Scrolls formula to Fallout kind of thing, or the way that it played. And then Obsidian were like, we should do a more layered world, more layered quest options, more characterization, customization. And then Fallout 4, a bit middling or whatever, but we've also had Fallout Shelter, which was one of the first times when Bethesda pivot into this sort of mobile market. And Shelter is pretty charming. Mm-hmm. It plays very well. And then they announced Fallout 76, and it's like, okay, that's another kind of experiment. And it's like, I haven't seen them take an authored step forward, a step forward, because Fallout 4 felt like 3.0 to me. It always felt like 3.5.
Right.
And the more I dove into the stuff online and watching people compare like the lockpicking or the hacking minigame in 4 is exactly the same as 3. Mm-hmm. Some of the solutions, some of the passcodes that you can use in 3 actually just work on 4.
Oh, really?
That much is reused.
That's quite
funny,
actually.
it's interesting because if you're them, I wonder how much they're like, this is now our IP and we're going to step forward, or we're going to keep doing these side ventures and these other little experimentations because we're not actually that sure what to do with it.
It's a scary prospect to be a AAA developer for these exact reasons, because you've got to sit there thinking, okay, our last game sold really, really well. This is the difficult second album, except it's not even the second album, it's the difficult fourth album, it's the difficult fifth album. And you're just like, every single time people are going to expect bigger and better things. And how do you accrue back the costs of development? We've got to make sure that it appeals to the broadest possible audience. Yeah. But then if you appeal to the broadest possible audience, then you're not appealing to the core fan base that got you there in the first place, which means you're not making a game for them, you're making a game for Johnny Two Pants.
Johnny Destiny.
So you end up with a game that feels more homogenous the bigger you get.
Like, I think as a general sort of, it's obviously very, we don't know what their overall mission goal was when they started with this, but it feels like, what if we made a Fallout that tapped into the MMO style quest generator, loot grindy type.
We've kind
of
seen that already with people like hunting down certain demons. Like, I'm already seeing kind of like in the news cycle very Destiny-esque headlines,
like
people hunting down
stuff.
It's interesting because it's not as though Fallout players haven't asked for the prospect of playing with friends before or sharing a journey. You know, one of the things I always kind of wanted from the Elder Scrolls was potentially having the ability to hop into a friend's world and see what it's like there. The problem with Fallout and having your friends with you is obviously that's completely buggered. And then also the stuff they took away when they added the ability to play with friends, you know, the lack of NPCs, the over-reliance on those little nuggets of lore like the vault logs and the notes and stuff, and kind of expecting players to buy into that narrative when they've been given so much more in the past. That, to me, seems like a pretty glaring error.
There's a lot of interesting problems with Fallout 76, and like, I've really given it, I gave it a solid chance. I enjoy the combat when it works. You can't play the game in third person if you want to use a melee weapon because the aiming is so
floaty.
And you barely hit.
You barely
anything.
See what you're swinging at.
So I mean, it's things like that. But like, you get out there, you're looking around, you're like, this is beautiful. And then about an hour later, it dawns on you. It's like, wait, why is this beautiful? Mm. Like, the bombs have just gone off. This is the peak point when things should be looking absolutely horrid. Mm-hmm. I get that the water is irradiated, but if you're showing me stuff that looks like a postcard from like like a holiday that I would genuinely go on, it makes no sense. Because then in New Vegas, Fallout 3, we get those green, grays, browns. Yes, they're dull color palettes, but that reflects a more nuclear thing. So they should, in theory, 3 and New Vegas should be looking more like Fallout 76 because the world is healing and getting better.
Yeah.
But it is the other way around.
Yeah.
And it's so confusing.
That exemplifies their sort of the clash of identities that is kind of at the heart of why things feel so off at the minute with Fallout. Because like you said, it's big and bright and colorful and luscious, and that's Fallout.
Look at the marketing campaign.
Yes.
The marketing campaign of using, is it the Beach Boys? The Monkees?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah,
Monkees.
I think that is one of the two.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, not only is that the wrong genre, like wrong time of music to be plucking from, but also why?
I think they're trying to strike a tonal dissonance there. Let's have
some fun together. Yeah. I get that, but it was just kind of like, what an odd marketing campaign.
You know what it reminded me a lot of? Remember the old Call of Duty multiplayer adverts where it'd be like, oh, it's Dave from The Office. We can play together.
That was odd as well.
It's very weird, and it's just one of those things I can't quite put my finger on. Because I'm still struggling to understand who this game is for.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's kind of my thing too. Yeah.
It's an identity crisis, but I will say there are elements that I like about 76. When you do meet up with a party and you do play with friends, it is quite fun. Right. I have enjoyed moments in that, and I do enjoy going for quests that remind me similar to like Borderlands or World of Warcraft style thing of like, go here. It's just the way the story is told is non-existent. I don't like reading stuff when I feel like a person should be telling me, or like a cutscene. There's no interaction. And you find that, how can you invest in a world if the world is keeping you at arm's length, just going, just go and read something. Just go here.
At this point, I'd rather take the other settlement is in need of help guy.
Preston Garvey. Like, I would rather be.
God, that comes to something with Preston Garvey is a better out of content than the majority of 76. Because Forbes just did a very recent write-up where they compared exactly what Todd Howard said when they first announced 76 compared to what is actually out there. And for the most part, like, it's fine. Like, it's just that you have to really scrutinize what Howard said, because he said, like, we'll be going up against dozens of other players in the world, and there's 24 per instance.
Like, technically.
Technically, that's more than one dozen.
Yeah.
And he talks about 16 times the detail of Fallout 4 in 76.
I mean, if that you're talking about God race, then yes.
Or just like general color palettes are cranked up.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that thing about like they're trying to make this play space that is immediately inviting, and it's kind of got that like sardonic, like twisted sense of humor because they've used the Beach Boys, but you're still in the apocalypse with a giant dragon bearing down on everybody. Or like a Deathclaw or something. And it's like they're trying to tick every single box, but I don't get a sense of authorship from that at all. I get like a financial meeting, and it's like, oh, we should do this, and this, because these things are profitable, and we'll use this IP.
It's funny that you look around and you see other games representing Fallout better than that. I mean, there's a game Metro. That's coming out at the end of Metro is a great example. Yeah. We played that at EGX, didn't we? And we were quite surprised with how much, looking at that now compared to that, if you told me that was Fallout 76, I would have been like, I'm bang on to this. Like, this world seems to fit the Fallout universe very, very
well.
It's
authors, different origins, different IPs, but like the way that Metro approaches its apocalypse is way more considered and way more like weighty.
So, it's nice counterweight, because you have Fallout, which takes a look at like American culture during the Cold War, and then you have this Russian perspective in the other one, which,
That's
Speaking of Russian perspective, we were talking about Atomic Heart, weren't we? That's coming out at the end of next year, and that's meant to be set in a sort of like alternate USSR sort of like, and they've got all of their crazy technology that they were working on, but it is again hampered by the time constraint and technology, and it just looks weird. It looks like that very famous theme park that they use in the Call of Duty level.
Oh, in Pripyat in Chernobyl.
It looks like an entire world based around that.
Yes, that's cool.
And like, I'm bang up for that, again, more than I am for 76.
I mean, that, even if you take that as like a piece of iconography or like, you know, that exemplifies Fallout 3. I mean, that style of like the color palette wise in terms of something that has been destroyed and you sort of look at
it. Teals and the greens.
Yeah,
and
I can see that there was once humanity there. I think we should talk about the state of Bethesda's game design, like the actual engine.
Okay.
It's very clear now. A lot of people, like, you know, made, you know, kind of just didn't mind too much back when Skyrim came out. It's like, oh, it's funny, the giant hits the thing.
Unless you're
on
PlayStation 3.
Yeah,
which makes the game completely unplayable. Yeah.
And so, like, that level of what some people refer to as, like, Bethesda junk has been there for years. But you look at the, you know, the general AAA space, and I don't like using words like it's unacceptable. But, like, you look at the state of Fallout 76 versus something like a God of War or Red Dead 2 or whatever. Yeah. Bethesda are on the same bracket. AAA, size,
resources,
team size, resources, income, all that kind of. Fallout Shelter did make a nice, pretty packet for them.
They have time on their side as well, because they could literally just sit there and go, a new Fallout game is coming, and everyone will be like, I will wait until the end of the earth. They've said that with the New Elder Scrolls game that's coming out, and everyone's just like, cool, we know it exists, so I'm happy to wait.
That was one of the things that stung so much with Fallout 4, was because they took their sweet time. It was seven years. And then it came out, and it was the same bugs, it was the same scripting issues, and 76 has T-posing enemies coming at you.
Yeah,
but it's weird because Todd Howard was in an, earlier on was in an interview earlier this year talking to an American German site called GameStar,
right?
And he was saying that they're going to keep using the creation engine for Elder Scrolls 6 and for Starfield. Ooh. Because the modders love it. And I'm like, the people might love modding. They love modding anything. Mm. But you can't to gear honest, towards that.
I would actually prefer if they went back to the engine that they used for Fallout 3 and 7.
That was Gamebryo, yeah.
Because I don't know why it's just that ugly nature. It's like watching old horror films, like watching Nosferatu. It still looks utterly creepy because it was filmed with crap and the effects were crap.
Yeah,
but at the time,
that's why this thing works very well.
It's just interesting because I guess you could argue that part of the charm with Bethesda's games is the way they look and the way they feel and the way characters walk around in a very robotic-like fashion, whatever. I do think that maybe the moment has passed for this sort of thing to just cut it anymore. Yeah. Because, I mean, we all enjoy a bit of like a T-posing enemy coming to get you because it is hilarious.
Yeah.
But
if that's the final boss.
When we look to the future and what we expect from the games industry going forward, we want to see Tamriel reimagined in a beautiful, hyper-detailed way. We want to see kind of the world of Fallout in a really detailed way. And I get that Bethesda's entire shtick is that, but saying that we're doing it to cater to the hardcore who mod, that's all fine and dandy, but who says that making a new engine will make it difficult or place limits on people
They're
doing that sort of creative
ones
and content?
They're the only ones that can actually determine whether that happens. If they actively just go, we're going to make an engine that is hard to mod, that's on them.
Exactly.
Like, they could easily consider, like, have that in mind. Mm-hmm. In fact, if they appeal to that audience by saying, going forward, we will make something that gives you the assets and stuff that we use to make stuff, people would love that.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that the modern community, obviously there's a huge modern community that supports Elder Scrolls to this day, but I still think they have to be a fraction of the overall consumer base that are buying the games and sustaining like that franchise. But and it is worth like addressing the thing that you said as well about like going forward, you expect a certain level of like graphical fidelity, because I've been one of the biggest champions of gameplay over graphics, and that's always going to be the case. But I think there has to be a baseline level of polish and a baseline level of, you know,
especially when it's impacting on gameplay as well.
Yes, like that's the thing. When it gets in the way of like the beats that you're trying to land, like if you literally can't connect to other people online, or if the server crashes because you launched three nukes at once, then they are massive problems. And and modders, like, okay, you can hand it over to the modding community, but they shouldn't have to. The modders aren't getting paid for it.
The thing is, like, modding shouldn't make your game playable. That's like the basic rule of thumb. Like, it should just be there and accessible for everyone to play. That's the whole point of trying to appeal to a broader audience. But the funny thing is that this year, we can honestly say now, and this isn't me just getting like on my high horse about it, because I did, like I say, find things I liked about Fallout 76.
No.
But, Fallout 70, this isn't even the best Fallout game we got this year, because modders have actually put out Fallout Miami, and that is fantastic. It's nearly fully voiced. All of the stuff makes sense. It explains so much as to why you're in this world. Mm-hmm. And the quests are literally brilliant. Yeah. Like, they're written so well. This has taken modders years.
I would be interested to see if Bethesda used these modding communities to actually hire, because if they're not, it does almost feel a little bit predatory. It's like, we're going to make this game and then put it out to people, and then their free labour will then provide the incentive for people on PC and Xbox One, because now they can do mods as well, or to play it, to download a few of them, less so if you're on PlayStation.
That's a huge conversation.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to leap straight into that, but it's just something I'm optioning forward here.
Totally. Well, it's worth addressing the fact that they do have this massive community side of things. I mean, was it Shivering Isles was the big expansion?
That was one of
Skyrim?
That was one of the big
Oblivion, I think. Was it Oblivion? Because there was Dragonborn for Skyrim.
Point being, one of the community members made this entire like chunk of additional content. It might have been for Oblivion, might have been for Skyrim. And then they managed to get a job in the industry. Everyone always assumed that they'd been hired by Bethesda. They actually went to work for BioWare. But there was a future for that person saying, look, I can do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That conversation is fascinating in terms of who owns the IP and what they can do with it. Mm-hmm. But when you've got the fan community kind of literally showing the authors, this is kind of what we want. I mean, the success of Miami and the conversations around it will dictate how Bethesda go forward.
Yeah.
But that is incredibly unique for Bethesda and for Fallout. There isn't any other IP right now where the fans are going, this is how it should be done.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because again, you kind of sound entitled when you say stuff like that. But at the same time, I feel like people do have a sense of ownership on it because of the amount of time that people have put in on the mods, because of how beloved it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the same with Star Wars and any other massive franchise, isn't it? I mean, like, you end up getting a fan base that's split right down the middle between those that will accept what's being put out and those that just say, look, it could be better.
Well, yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I probably would forego the Star Wars comparison personally. But
that is sometimes very toxic.
But entitled fans.
But yeah, the thing with Fallout is that the community do put in an awful lot into that series. And the same goes for The Elder Scrolls. And I just think it is interesting to consider whether or not Bethesda are relying on that community to potentially retain a sense of good faith. Because to Bethesda's credit, there aren't many games these days that allow players to really tell their experience with mods, etc. But there is something a bit iffy about it that I don't particularly like.
Yeah,
I think it's a strange conundrum because they've been in hot water with it before in terms of how they monetize it. Like, obviously, it became the Creation Club, and they have their own little currency, and it's like you can go in and
Was it them who tried to make mods purchasable?
Initially, yeah. But that went away. Then it came back as the Creation Club, and they just, you know, they changed the currency and that kind of thing. And obviously, there are ways that I think that modders get reimbursed for certain things they put out on PC and stuff. But I just think it's a hell of a weird disconnect between what Bethesda's trying to do. If you take 76 as an isolated product, it's this online MMO shooter type thing that's kind of in the vein of a Destiny or in the vein of any sort of quest loot grindy type online experience. And you contrast that with Fallout Miami, and you look at the history of the franchise, and you look at this, all these narrative backbones and story backbones and immersion and all that kind of stuff. And where 76 is now, like you said at the very beginning, is almost the polar opposite of where those older games started. And it's just like, I don't know how they necessarily go forward with it. I think one of the biggest problems with 76 is that lack of polish.
Yeah,
you play it for a bit and you get exactly what it is.
A lot of people are suggesting, and worryingly, I think it's actually picking up steam, that this might actually go free to play soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's been a rumbling.
Actually, I haven't even looked at the sales.
Well, because the sales are down nearly 40%, 40 to 50% down on the sales for Fallout 4.
Right.
There's planned DLC expansions coming, but obviously that won't be going ahead if there's no player base for them. People there have been very, very negative about it. I've seen scores of even the low 20s.
There's a lot of low stuff.
And I will say that it's a less than average game. It's not like downright terrible. Mm-hmm. There are elements to enjoy, like I say, but just it's the worst Fallout game I can remember playing. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, a free-to-play model actually kind of makes sense.
Because isn't that what happened with Elder Scrolls Online? Because that's an interesting example for me as well, because that was Zenny?
Yes, it wasn't Bethesda.
But again, that's probably another interesting example, because that started out as being very... That was you had to buy it, and then eventually there are certain aspects of it that...
They changed a lot of the monetization with that. They kind of relaunched it and kind of went back on it and stuff. I mean, it's weird because it's like... If you go back to that Forbes thing and what Todd Howard said when they first announced it, he was like, we're going to have this online play-space multiplayer Fallout. You know, you guys will decide the good people and the bad people.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I can envision an online Fallout product where, because of the timeline, you have you could have had the formation of the Brotherhood of Steel, you have the formation of the different factions, and the way that you play, slots into those different ways of playing. And then over time, they can have all these dynamic events that they just plug in and be like, hey, randomly on a day, they'll trigger like an event on a certain part of the map, and everyone goes there. And hey, what do you know? The survivors became this faction.
Like maybe another vault unlocks, and it's the first group there that can go claim the rewards from it. That would be fun.
Because there aren't super mutants in this yet, I don't think.
There are super mutants in it.
There was some classes, and so it was like the Scorched are the replacement for some.
Yeah, which is annoying because the Scorched are perfect NPC candidates. If you've got humanoid characters in there, then just make them quest givers.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, instead of having a Mr. Gutsy or one of the robots floating about giving you the quest, just have a human. That's all it took.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
I wonder if it is a problem with the engine and they couldn't get the dialogue to sync up. I don't know. It just feels like it's such a thing. It's such a weird oversight. Because it feels like they've stripped stuff down to make the creation engine work with this vision of an online Fallout. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we might as well end on things that we want to see going forward, or we'd like to see going forward.
For
76, because mine would be this way of doing like some sort of faction-based thing with dynamic events that just happen. Mm-hmm. One of the coolest things that not anywhere near enough devs are doing is what Elite Dangerous's devs did, where you fly around different planets.
Trading.
Well, trading's good fun, but they just put an alien attack in the game.
Nice.
So one player was attacked by a massive alien, came into his view. shoot and was like, what the living hell is this?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Recorded the footage, put it online and said, guys, has anyone else had this? No one else had, and got this massive conversation going. But you can do all those sorts of things with a live service. Mm. And so I would love to see them embrace that and trigger like, you know, a new species or trigger certain characters or events or whatever, and just, you know, do the community stuff well.
Mm. For me, it's about making sure that one of the things that they actually promised on is actually fleshed out more, which is PvP. Mm. Now, I know that a lot of people won't be going into this, like looking for a PvP experience, or at least like, you know, they'll do it minimally. But as it stands at the moment, say I want to attack Ewan, I have to shoot Ewan or hit him, and he has to hit me back only when you're a certain level, and then it engages a sort of gloves off fist fight. It's very, very minimal.
It's like Quinsbury rules, sir.
And there is no reward for doing it, apart from just getting a bounty on your head and maybe stealing some supplies that you've got. And I can't.
See, I think that's because they want you to build the wasteland.
Yeah, but then don't advertise it. Because the wasteland's meant to be chaotic and mental, and this just
people will.
Excuse me, good sir. I challenge you to
fisticuffs. And
it's like, no thanks. I'm just going to walk away. Good. So I'm shooting you for no reason then. So this will do. Brilliant. Cool.
Yeah. It's
really weird because it's just dawned on me that I'm really sad talking about Fallout, which it shouldn't be the case because I think the world is so charming and so interesting, but Fallout 76 fundamentally doesn't have any of that due to the narrative issues that we talked about. So personally, going forward, I think Bethesda would probably do well to introduce a narrative piece of content where it was separate from the open world and you could team up with four people and just do the story together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have the party leader interact with, choose the dialogue, and you can have a voting system potentially.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But like a proper cooperative experience of people that the main draw for Fallout is the story in the world.
Yeah.
Because right now, I just don't see the appeal in just fanning around in the wasteland, just looking at crap. So
that's another thing too, is that the way that the quests are designed at the minute, it's a lot of fetch quests,
and it's a lot of just walking. I mean, it's fine. It would be okay if the world felt more populated with creatures and enemies and stuff like that.
I think if they do go free to play, I think people will check it out of sheer curiosity.
Absolutely.
And if they've managed to put something in there that's enough of a hook, because I mean, even Sea of Thieves is still going. They're still plugging content into it, even if the initial reception of Sea of Thieves was pretty empty. And personally, I don't think there's that much to it. But the devs are still supporting it. Bethesda have more than enough money and resources to do a No Man's Sky and just plug in a million cool things. Because something like No Man's Sky, the state of that right now is just completely polar opposite to what it was at launch. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is a future for the wasteland. But
2019 will be the year of the underdog. We've got Battlefront 2 coming back at it with the Clone Wars. We've got No Man's Sky. Maybe Fallout 76 will join the group.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe. I mean, there's definitely plenty of time between this and the next like full-on Bethesda game. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see. But let us know what you think. Get in touch with us on social media or let us know down in the comments. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan.
Hello.
And Jules.
Hey. And bye.
Bye.
And bye.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.